And Ian has a saying, it goes like this. Before you can save the world, you've got to save yourself. And what he's talking about is, folks, the highest cost in the beef cow-calf production system is what? It's not hay. What is it?
Open cow.
It's an open cow. Folks, you can go to Missouri right now and buy a bred cow in the springtime. This spring, you could have bought one for $1,800. And you pushed her too hard. You made her eat cockleburrs for 3 weeks or whatever. She didn't get a good amount of forage. She got thin on you. She didn't even cycle. That's what Ian's talking about here. You've got to get your cows bred back. So if your cows become open, that $1,800 cow, you sell her in the fall, she's open, she didn't breed, what is she worth? $800. You've lost $1,000 on one cow. You can't do that. That's what Ian's talking about. That's what I want to talk to you all about today. I've made some of these mistakes. I don't want you all to make them.
And welcome back to another South Pole podcast. My name is Becky Zarzynski, and welcome to today's episode. For today's South Pole Fix, I'll be sharing a recording I did of Mr. Greg Judy, the regenerative rancher, from the 15th annual South Pole Field Day and Cattle Auction that took place in Albertville this past September of 2023. Now, if you were able to join us at the field day, this will be a great recap of Greg's talk. And if you're anything like me, you're probably taking notes the whole time that Greg spoke to record any ideas or practices that would fit into your own grazing operation. However, if you weren't able to come, this will be a very insightful overview of so many topics that Greg covered, including weeds, winter grazing, grazing practices that you might not have heard of, pro tips on leasing land, soil biology, dung beetles, earthworms, finished or not finished, looking at grass-finished beef, sheep in your grazing operation, drought, and water cycles. So let's dig into today's episode and listen to what Mr. Greg Judy has to share with us today.
We met a guy many years ago, and I always thought as myself as a grass farmer, and I kind of prided myself on being a grass farmer. And this guy from South Africa, you'll hear me talk about him today, Ian Mitchell Ennis. And Ian told me, he said, Greg, you're not a grass farmer. I'm like, yes, I am. He goes, no. He said, you're a microbe farmer. So what Ian was telling me, we need to take it a step lower. If we'll learn to feed the soil and all these bugs, folks, there one healthy teaspoon of really rich microbial soil in these pastures, if you're not nuking them, there's a billion. There's a billion microbes per teaspoon. Think about that. There's more life under the soil than there is above the soil. And if we'll learn to feed that, things will go really well. So Ian was talking about these microbes. And you know, I'd heard about them, I didn't know that much about them, but folks, there's a website, there's a video out there by Dr. Pat Richardson. Pat Richardson, Texas lady, and they call her the dung beetle queen. She studies manure. And her mother sent her to college and said, you mean to tell me you spent all this money and all you do is look at manure? But that lady is the one that got me woke up to what's now in the soil, folks. There's a battle going on underneath our feet out there. Things are eating each other. The root exudates are coming out. It's just a jungle. But we got to feed it. You feed it and they will come. So we're going to talk about that. You know, we're using ruminants. These are ruminants that can live that grass, eat on that grass out there. And Teddy and I can eat that grass. We're going to fall over dead. But a cow can eat that. They got multiple stomachs. Folks are herbivores. They're not grainivores. They weren't developed to eat grain, they were developed to eat grass. Solar grazing, so what are we talking about here? We're talking about growing green blades of grass from sunlight. The ruminant comes along, takes the tongue, rips off the top part of that plant. So what we have focused on doing is we're trying to get the tips of those plants off. And I was talking to Doug Creech this morning, the owner of this farm. And he was talking about, Greg, he said, I like to leave. I like to leave it looking like this when I leave. I'm like, yeah, that's what we like to do too. Because the longer plant you leave behind, especially if you're in a drought, is keeping that sunlight off your ground floor. It also grows back quicker. The energy's higher in the top part of the plant. There's no parasites. We haven't worn the cow for over 30 years. It's the parasites that live on the ground surface. Why are they down there? They're trying to keep out the sunlight. So this is a really pretty picture. Isn't that beautiful? Folks, I lost sight of what was important. I had these herbivores. I had these cockleburrs. And I got into mob grazing. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make them eat those burrs. I made our South Pole cattle eat those burrs. And they did. I put them in at 300,000 pounds per acre. Moved them twice a day. They ate them. They ate them all the way to the ground. The next year, they came back worse. They were worse the second year. And Ian was there in the fall, and he's like, Greg, you're gonna get tired of, when are you going to get tired of grazing cockleburrs? I'm like, well, Ian, I was tired of that 2 years ago. Well, they quit grazing it like you're grazing it. Folks, my cows, I put too much pressure on the cows. They came off that paddock thin. I started getting some pink eye in my calves. Why? Because they weren't getting the nutrition through the milk. And Ian has a saying, it goes like this. Before you can save the world, you've got to save yourself. And what he's talking about is, folks, the highest cost in the beef cow-calf production system is what? It's not hay. What is it?
Open cow.
It's an open cow. Folks, you can go to Missouri right now and buy a bred cow in the springtime. This spring you could have bought one for $1,800. And you pushed her too hard. You made her eat cockleburrs for 3 weeks or whatever. She didn't get a good amount of forage. She got thin on you. She didn't even cycle. That's what Ian's talking about here. You've got to get your cows bred back. So if your cows become open, that $1,800 cow, you sell her in the fall, she's open, she didn't breed, what is she worth? $800. You've lost $1,000 on one cow. You can't do that. That's what Ian's talking about. That's what I want to talk to you all about today. I've made some of these mistakes. I don't want you all to make them. So there it is. Ian says, Greg, you've got to act like you don't own these weedy areas. And this could be cockleburrs, Canadian thistle. It could be any weed on your farm. When's the weakest point of a weed? When is it? It's at emergence when it comes up in the spring. So we did this. We act like we didn't own it. In the springtime, cockleburrs come up June 1st. So I went around my cockleburr field. I didn't even graze it. It came up. The clover and the grasses kicked the cockleburr out. The cockleburr was still there. It just couldn't grow. I shaded it out. And this is what it looks like today. Yeah. No chemical fertilizer, no lime. We did unroll some hay on it in the wintertime. We didn't put any seed down. And folks, that was a bean field. It had been bean for 50 years. Beans, herbicide, pesticide, fungicide. Teddy talked about not seeing any worms. I walked that whole field. As soon as I leased the farm, I walked it and I'm like, I'm never going to get this turned around. I walked looking for a worm. I couldn't find one. Today, you can take a pocket knife and go out there. You can cut a little divot out like that. You're going to find two. You're going to find two worms and a little divot. They're there. So, I want to talk a little bit about burning. I was a burnaholic, I'll admit it. I was a burnaholic. I liked it. It was fun. There's nothing adrenaline rush as throwing a match down and seeing it take off. Unless it's going towards your neighbor's house. Or his haystack. So, Ian woke me up to what I was doing. He said, just remember this, Greg. Burning promotes plant spacing. Burning promotes plant spacing. It makes the plants move further apart. Grazing promotes plant density. It brings the plants closer together. Now, folks, burning is a tool in your toolbox. I'm not saying you can't use it, but use it sparingly. We don't use it anymore. Folks, this farm was covered with carbon. It had this beautiful thatch on it. But the sun couldn't get through it. They hadn't had herbivores on this farm for 75 years. So I brought the Amish in. The Amish can't own a chainsaw, but they sure know how to run one. And I gave two Amish boys chainsaws, and they absolutely nailed those cedars. Got them off there, brought the cattle in, and we started trampling all that stuff on the ground. That's the first year. 75 years. And people want to take livestock off the land? Come on. We take them off the land, folks, we're done. It's just like Peter said, it's the only tool we have left. We've got to have the livestock. Same pasture, just a different picture. This farm is owned by two nurses, husband and wife. They're retired, and they love what we're doing out there. We got a 10-year lease on it. They said, Greg, we put it in our will. We're not going to sell it. It's going to our kids. Our kids love what we're doing. But here's a cool one. When they want to come out there, they don't live on the farm, they live in Columbia. When they want to come out there to watch the stars or have a campfire, they always call me. I said, Greg, wouldn't it be all right if we came out tonight? I'm like, it's your farm. You know what that is, though? That's a sign of respect. That's what it is. So to get a good lease and to keep a good lease, folks, you got to build relationships. I'm closer to some of my leaseholders than I am my own family. Not Jan, of course, but my siblings. Overgrazing, I did that. I'm not proud of that picture. Folks, that's my first year of mob grazing. I want to show you, don't make this mistake. These are custom grazed, big old Charolais, 1,800-pound cows. You couldn't see over the top of their back. Their feet were this big around. You couldn't fill them up. But I was using them, and see what they did there? They reached under that wire, and they grazed the full length of that paddock. Burn that in your mind. If you go out and you see that in the morning, don't do that. Immediately correct it. Give them twice the bigger area, or move them sooner. Because what I did is I limited those cows. And if you continue to do that, the pH in their gut is going to change. It's going to go to 9. 7. It should be 7. And once that pH goes to 9, they won't even cycle. They won't even come and eat. That's your fault. So we can do better. Burn, we talked about that. There's that farm, that thatch on it. Gosh, I'd have loved to throw a match on that in the old days. But you know what? I set myself back so many years by doing that. Because I had all this beautiful carbon. What did I do? I threw a match on it. Poof. There it went. And now I had to haul hay in to replace the carbon that I had. Don't do that. There's litter. So there's what we're doing today. So a picture of that. You see a little difference there? It's called litter. What is litter? It's anything organic that an animal can trample on the ground. Peter talked about the big herds of bison going across the prairie. Absolutely. They ate, they trampled, and they left. There is predators keeping those animals grouped together. Folks, we don't have the wolves and the mountain lions. Well, we do. We don't have wolves yet. You in Colorado, you do now. They just released them, by the way. But we don't have the predators, the grizzly and all that. But our hot wire fence, that's the beautiful thing about technology. Castings. Folks, anybody, when you go out into your pastures and you've got this nice litter bank and this canopy protecting your farm, go out there and open that up. Look down in there. Your whole ground surface should be covered with earthworm castings. And now in a severe drought, they're not going to be fresh. But there'll be castings there that were deposited that spring. Earthworms have got to have moisture, and if they don't have moisture and rain, they're not going to be there. They're going to be 5 feet down. But they'll come back when you get rain. So how long does the earthworm live? Anybody know that? Come on. 7 years. How many kids can he produce? Anybody know how many kids they can produce? An earthworm in 7 years? 1.2 million. 1.2 million. You get up to 25 worms per square foot, it's around 40 tons of earthworms per acre per year. That's what they're putting down. The earthworm tunnels that they go through your land, folks, your pastures, they found tunnels now that last for 30 years. So those earthworm tunnels are hanging around for 30 years. Well, what happens when you get a rain? You just heard Peter explain how we're catching the rain. That's how we're catching the rain, is the worms. Castings, that's helping a lot. Winter grazing, this is a big deal here. Folks, if you'll learn to winter stockpile you some grass. And I want to cover that just a little bit. Everybody thinks that winter stockpiling begins in the fall. If you go to a grazing school in Missouri put on by the university, I'm picking on them a little. But they'll say, well, Greg, you know, or they'll tell the people, you need to go out there July 25th to the 30th. You need to brush hog your whole farm off where you're going to stockpile. And you need to put down 50 to 100. 20 pounds of N per acre. Then don't graze it for 45 to 60 days. I'm like, okay. Well, first of all, if I brush all get off and it doesn't rain, am I going to get any utilization out of that nitrogen fertilizer? Nope. Ian calls nitrogen fertilizer being a drug addict. You've got your soil broken. You don't have any life in it. And if you don't come back every year with your daily fix, your yearly fix of nitrogen, you're going to go broke. And the fertilizer companies laugh their butt off all the way to town with your money. Because they know you're going to be back next year. So let's get off that nitrogen. Folks, winter stockpile begins in the spring. Well, wait a minute, Greg. You said winter and you're coming in the spring. How does that affect your fall stockpile? It affects your fall stockpile, but not overgrazing. You've got to get this haystack. Ian calls it growing your haystack. Because every time you graze a plant off, it sends out more appendages. And so the haystack is thicker and thicker as the summer progresses, as long as you're not overgrazing. Okay? So in the springtime, that's when your stockpile begins, not in the fall. You don't have time. Yeah, we do get some snow. That's pretty good snow for Missouri. Y'all get that snow in Alabama? No? Okay. That's our ATV bale and all. Folks, this has been a huge change. We buy our hay. What hay we do feed, I don't put any hay up on our farm. And you're actually bringing in nutrients from other places when you unroll it. And for what people will sell you hay, you can't afford to own the equipment. But I want to cover one more thing. I do a lot of consulting around the United States. Heck, I've been overseas a little bit. But I'll go and I'll look at a field. I'm like, what's this? And it may cover 60% of the farm. It lays the best. I'm like, I'm seeing cattle out there. Oh, no, ain't gonna graze that. That's my hay field. I'm like, what do you mean you're not gonna graze it? Well, we can't, we don't have any fence. I don't have any water out there. And plus, that's my hay field. I said, what are you going to do if you get in a drought? Well, we'll feed hay. I'm like, okay. So as long as you have a precious hay field you're not going to graze, you're going to feed a lot of hay. Also, hay fields are absolutely your life. Well, put it to grass, put the cattle out there, and forget about hay. Because haying promotes monocultures. Grazing promotes diversity. We all know that fescue, a pure stand of fescue, is crap. It's hard on cattle. It's hard on them. But if you'll graze it and get your density right, these cattle can make them this beautiful haven, all these different diverse grasses. And so people say, Greg, what do you plant? And they always, I get an email every day. What do I need to plant? Plant four hooves. Seriously, four hoods. And if you really got deep pockets, you want to throw a lot of money away, go out to the road ditch and see what's growing and go plant that. Because you know that is adapted. A lot of these fancy new seeds, you don't know if they're going to grow in your farm. It's a crapshoot. It's kind of like bringing a bull in from Wyoming and bringing it into Mississippi or Alabama and saying that bull's going to survive and do well. No. He's probably going to fall on his face. Ask me how I know that. We custom grazed for many years. Jan and I did. We brought a lot of cattle in from the west, and those cattle could not make it on fescue. Yeah, they couldn't do it. The fertilizer, that's what it is. I call this our fertilizer tool. And heck, I'll go one step further. When it snows and it gets deep, I still don't feed in a bale ring. We'll take I've got a blade. We'll blade that field, and I'm going to put that hay out there on that land. Folks, it's too valuable to feed in a ring in my area. Now, we get rain and it's puggy. If you put a hay ring in Missouri in winter and you get a wet week, your cows are going to be to their belly in mud. And you're going to grow a really good stand of ragweed there for many years. You've destroyed your pasture. Roll it out. Doug Creech was talking about this morning. He calls it a seeder. When he unrolls hay, all that seed, he's throwing seed as he goes across his property. Absolutely. So the cows still have to work for us, folks. A lot of people don't have cows working for them. These cows are working. Every day that I've got to feed hay, I'm working for the cow. When the cows are out there and all I've got to do is move a wire, even in snow, that's a wonderful day to be in the cattle business. It's a wonderful day. We do a lot of civil pasture, and so we're taking these animals and we're moving them into woods. Folks, if you've got some timber on your prop and it's not managed correctly, I would start on the edge and work my way in. Don't do the whole woods at one time, you'll go broke. But you can do 50 to 100 feet in. The next year, maybe tackle another 50, 100 feet. And over time, you can start making some civil pasture around your farm. What is civil pasture? Civil pasture is livestock,
grass, and trees.
The combination of those three. Grass, livestock, and trees. And when I say spacing, if you're wanting more grass, those trees need to be spaced about 100 feet apart. You gotta get sunlight around that tree. And if you leave too many trees, you're dropping too many leaves, the leaves are gonna kill your grass out in the fall. Too much tannin. It covers up your grass. Ian, I'll never forget it. He came to my farm first year, and Ian always gives me one free day. And Ian's not a cheap date. He's a pricey guy to have come, but he's worth every cent. And so I put Ian in my mule, and we take off down the hill. And the first thing we go is we come by this patch of timber. I've got a fence going the full length of the farm. And he looks at that fence, and next to the patch, what's that? I'm like, that's my wildlife habitat. And Ian looked at me and grinned. He said, there's no wildlife in there. There won't be until you put cattle in there. And so I ripped the fence out. And we put cattle in there, high density, for short periods. Folks, cows will destroy trees. If you leave them in there all year, they'll absolutely wipe them out.
Yeah, I think that was going bad.
Is that better? Sorry about that. Another thing, folks, this is something they're finding out now. I work with the Missouri Agroforestry Group, and they come out and do a seminar every year at our farm. So I get to work with some really good foresters. And what they're finding out is this grass that's growing underneath these trees, guess what? They call that partial shade. The grass has a lower lignin. It's got a lower lignin value in it. Lignin is a compound in forage that cows can't break down. So not only do you have shade and shelter, you got more forage, it's better. It's better forage. And in a drought, in a drought. Those trees will keep that grass shaded, and there'll be more dew. There'll be more dew under those trees because it's keeping that sun off there for longer periods of time. So you get in a really hot day, those cattle almost have a smile on their face when they're down there in those silvo pastures. We've got 1,900 acres. I think we've got 19 farms now, five of them we now own. But on those farms, folks, there's 1,050 of it is timber. We've only got, we've got around 850 acres of grass. So we're doing this. This picture here, we went in and cut the trees out, brought the cattle in, unrolled hay in the wintertime, didn't seed anything. We call this picture bruising the soil, and that's what we're doing. So in the early summer, late summer, early fall, the trees are starting to turn. You can see most of the oaks have already turned brown in that picture. We're tip grazing. Right now, the boys right now are cranking around our farm. They're cranking. Like, what? Aren't you trying to grow a fall stockpile? Why are you going so darn fast for? Well, here's what we used to do. We used to lock them down. And I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm just going to give you all a little idea. Okay, don't say everything that I do up here, you can go home and do it on your farm. I think you can, but I'm not. We put our cows in one area and we fed them hay for 30 days. To let the other 90% of our farm winter stockpile, okay? So they weren't grazing on it. And it grew. We got a couple rains and it grew up. But in those 30 days, it was from the 1st of September to October 1st, our cows dropped the full body condition score. Why'd they do that? And it was good hay. It was orchard grass, clover, unrolled, good water, good mineral. Why'd they lose condition? It's because they've been eating grass. They've been eating grass all summer, and I put them on dry hay. And so I'm going in the winter now, I've lost the body condition score, and I don't have time to make it up. I can't get it back on, because now it's getting down in the 20s at night. So I'm like, this doesn't work, not on my farm. So what we started doing, we started tip grazing. So we move the animals really fast. We give them big paddocks, and we go around the whole farm in the month of September. And here's what happened. We've been doing this now for 3 to 4 years. The cows got pig fat. Their tail heads got 3 wrinkles on. Looked like you could butcher them. And my grass, I'm only taking the tips off. The grass comes back quickly because it's cooler weather. It's cool season grass growth weather. It's not 90 to 100 degrees. It's down in the 50s and the 60s. That's when fescue likes to grow. We're just taking the tips off and we're going. So when we come back around in 30 days, you can't even tell we grazed it, assuming you get a rain. You gotta have moisture. But typically we'll get some rain in September, October. So I just wanted to share that with you all. Riparian zones. Everybody's talking about we gotta get the cattle out of the riparian zones, and I agree. We can't park them in there. But you can put them in there for a short duration. They actually heal riparian zones. And that's because of the animal impact. That's not what you want to do right there. This guy let the cattle in the pond. They pooped and peed. They stomped it. And folks, that guy gave me a call. Every week he needed to use my head chute. He didn't have a head catch. And I said, Greg, I got a sick cow. I got a sick cow. I got a sick cow. And it was every week. I said, Nathan, what is going on? I don't know. They're just sick. Well, we bought that farm, one of my landowners did, and the first thing I did is I cut the dam on it. I cut the dam on that pond, we drained it. Folks, it was a putrid mess. If you're making cows drink brackish water, shame on you. Your cows should be drinking high quality water. How many people let cattle in their ponds? All right, come on now, somebody here lets cattle in their ponds. Okay, good. That's a brave soul to reach your hand up. Folks, ponds cost a lot of money to build. Put a rock drinking skirt on them. It doesn't cost that much money. Bring a skid steer there and put some rock down. Let those cows walk down on that rock skirt and fence the rest of the pond off. You should be able to go down to your pond and see fish swimming. If you can see fish swimming, and they love those rock skirts, the fish do. If you can see down the water, see fish swimming, your cattle are going to be gaining weight. You're not going to have sick cattle. If you let them in the pond, they're pooping and peeing in there, that's not a good thing. We were on a ranch, me and Mark Bader in Texas. The guy had 500 cow-calf pairs. And this one pasture had a 5-acre lake right in the middle of it. We walked up to that, and every cow that was drinking had swam out into the middle of that 5-acre lake. They swam. They're like hippopotamuses floating around out there. I said, Mark, what's going on? He said, Greg, they're trying to find a place that doesn't stink. Those cows had pooped and peed, and they got some rain and washed all that stuff into that pond. The only water that wasn't putrid was out in the middle. I hate going past the pond and seeing cows, and that's just nasty. It's costing you money, folks. Not only is it economically killing you, it's also killing your animal performance. And you won't have any fish. You're going to kill the fish, too. That's good water. That's the same water I'm drinking in my house. I'm not saying you have to have piped water, but I am saying keep the animals out of it if you can. Dung beetles. Teddy was talking about dung beetles. I tell people I slept with the devil for 7 years. What I mean by that is Jan and I were custom grazers. We had to worm cattle or we didn't get cattle. Well, guess when they wormed them? Right when they came off the truck. There was a guy pouring Ivermec down the back of these cattle, and I hated it, but I did it. Because I had to make a living on the land. I had payments to make. But once we started owning our own livestock, that was it. We stopped. And it took about 3 to 4 years, but now we've got the dung beetles back. So don't be pouring your animals. That's a dung beetle rolling up a ball. And so the female lays an egg inside that ball. And when the baby dung beetle hatches out, that's buried down in a hole. I've seen holes that are as deep as 14 to 16 inches deep. And Pat Richardson actually captured a bunch of them and put them in an aquarium, a fish aquarium, filled it full of dirt and fed them manure. Those dung beetle tunnels went everywhere. They looked like a spider web. They didn't just go down. They went this way and that way in all sorts of directions. Think about that. How many of y'all look at your cow manure on a daily basis? Good. Man, y'all are a great group. Folks, I can't crawl inside the cow's gut and look at her fermentation tank working. Yes, I can, right there. Look at those manure pads and adjust. So it's all about manage for what you want. I'm sorry, plan for what you want, manage with what you have. You got to be very flexible. There was a question yesterday, how often do you rotate your cattle? It depends. It all depends. It depends on the rainfall. Springtime, fall, winter, whatever, it depends. But that manure path there gives me cold shit. I get giddy when I look at that. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit warped. People say, Greg, when are you going to quit doing this stuff? When are you going to retire? I'm like, retire? I'm not doing that. I hope they find me with my face down in that manure pad. That would be a great way for me to go out. Dead serious about that. Too many of us, Larry Israel was talking yesterday. Larry is a great friend of mine. It's good to see him. He came to our grazing school. It's awesome that Larry's got his daughter. I thought that was awesome. Folks were butchering them and they're not finished. That steer is not finished. He's got big old gut. He's got some wrinkles in his neck. He's got pretty fair brisket. But you look right there on his tail head. He doesn't have the wrinkles. Then you go to the next one. Look at this one, the closest one right here. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4. He's got 4 wrinkles in his tail head. That's probably going to be a good eating animal. We don't want lean beef. We want fat, grass fat on these animals. That's where the flavor's at. Okay? We look at multi-species a little differently. I like diversity of plants, but also want some diversity of animals. And sheep are an unfair advantage. They're easier to keep in than goats. I don't have any problem with the goats. Matter of fact, we just got some. And I'm getting nailed on YouTube about, Greg, you got goats. You're a heretic. I'm like, no, I'm not. We got brush. Goats like brush. We got these from a guy that kind of had them going. He let them all die. The ones that couldn't make it, and that's what we started with. Okay? They're broke to hot wire. We're running the goats with two wires with the sheep and the guard dogs. The cattle are in that mix as well. So, if you can put an animal out there that gives you two back instead of one, learn to use that. There's not too many free things in life on the farm. That's a free one right there. Because you're getting weeds. These darn things eat the weeds. They like ironweed. That's one of their favorite. Goldenrod. Honeysuckle, autumn olive, thorn trees. That's what the sheep eat. So there's a saying that goes like this. Your sheep will make your cattle pasture better. They will. I don't like brush hogging. I feel like I'm losing money when I do that. I'm sitting in that tractor seat. I'm like, darn it. I just mowed down all that ironweed and the sheep could have ate that. And I could have grown some lambs that I could sell. Folks, there's a lot quicker payback on sheep than there is cattle. That's because you can breed a ewe at 7 months. Did y'all hear that? She gives you a baby when she turns 12 months old. She's a very efficient animal. Teddy and I did that talk in Pennsylvania, and we got on that small cow kick. The 1,000-pound cow versus the 1,500-pound cow. And it was a lively discussion. We made some people at big cows pretty mad that day. Teddy said, it's just math, folks. You can run 3 1,000-pound cows for the same amount of forage as 2 1,500-pound cows. Well, sheep are smaller frame. They're just lower maintenance. They don't eat as much. In the wintertime, they get no hay and they get no water. We don't give the sheep any water. They won't even drink it if you give it to them. As long as they're grazing stockpile. Now, you put sheep up in a corral and give them hay, you better give them water. There we are on a cattle drive, moving them down the road. That's at the far end, and to the other end of Judy Farms is 5.5 miles. We walk them. Now, we pick up the time when we can do that. We don't want our neighbors mad at us, so we wait for everybody to go to work, and we put them on the road, and we walk them. And if they really manure up the road, we'll drag something. Because I don't want a Mercedes-Benz going down the road throwing cow manure up on the car. Ian has challenged me for years to put these two together. Greg, he said, just sell your guard dogs. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, put them sheep in with them cows. Have a flirt. I'm like, Ian, if I sell my dogs, half my sheep, probably 7/8 of them will get eaten in 2 weeks. He said, don't worry about it. He said, the ones that get adapted to the cows will live, and the others get eaten by coyotes. Problem solved. I'm like, Okay. Folks, that's going to be a pretty costly experiment. So I haven't done it yet. But it still eats at me. It still eats at me. Wouldn't that be cool? You know, you got all this. I know people doing it. There's people running cattle and sheep together, and they're making it work. If you had one farm, you didn't have to take them off that farm. It would work. Folks, we're going down gravel roads next to people's houses that have dogs. And the dogs come out and bark at our cattle. We've got 4 guard dogs you can't put a hand on. They're going to kill those dogs. I love my dog. I'm sure these kids have dogs. And if their dog got killed by a guardian dog, that's not the way to build good neighbors. Okay? So that's why we haven't done it. Learn to look at your soil. Very rich soil. How many of y'all, when you go move your cows, you got a spade on your four-wheel or your side-by-side? Okay, learn to bring a shovel or a spade and dig that up and see what you're looking at. It shouldn't look like molding clay. It should have roots, it should be pliable, it should be worms crawling off into your hands. This is the kind of soil that Peter was talking about that could hold that 3.5 inches an hour. Okay? There's a fat one. That's one of the tenderest animals I ever ate. There's one thing I don't like about that steer. He didn't shed off. He still got a little bit of winter hair coat. But you could cut his steak with a fork. And he's so fat that if he takes another bite, his britches are going to explode. They need to have that waddle in their ass and they walk away from you. Okay? They got a waddle, they're not ready. I love this picture versus the overgrazing picture I showed you earlier. So the cows have put down a lot of carbon right here. They've trampled it. They left some standing. So a good ratio is 30% consumed, 30% trampled, and 30% left standing. Why would you want 30% of your forage left standing?
Wind.
Habitat. Yeah, wind. It slows the wind down. So you're actually holding more water on your farm. Folks, in a drought, this will save your bacon. We had a terrible drought this year. We went from July 30th of 2002 till August 2nd of 2023. We never had a rain over an inch and a half. And so far for the year 2023, we went all through spring, we didn't get anything. We didn't have a spring flush this year. So I'm gonna talk about that a little bit. And I tell people, praying for rain, there's nothing wrong with it. I pray for rain. When I'm in a drought, you know, I'll do anything. I will. I'll go out in the yard and dance naked if I had to. You probably don't want to see that, but folks, it's not a good management strategy. You know how much rain you've got. I don't have my day timer with me. Dude, right here. Keep a tablet, record every single rain you get, what the date was. You need to know when that last rain was. And if you haven't had a measurable rain in 30 days, and your grasses are not growing back from the last previous grazing, you need to be cutting off some animals. Ian said there should always be 15% as your first cut. 15%. Okay? For every week that you're in a drought and you don't get another rain, you need to add 7 days to your recovery period. For every week that it doesn't rain, you need to add another 7 days to recovery period. So if you're at 30 days and it hasn't rained, you need to be 37 days. You go another week, you need to be at 42 days. Keep adding that week on there. It will save you. So this spring, we didn't get any rain. I knew we were in trouble. We had a dry fall, dry winter. We didn't get any snow to speak of, no rain. Ponds are almost empty. Some of them were. And so we sold all our steers. Sold every one of them. Folks, steers can't reproduce. Get rid of them. Well, this year, we hit a home run because prices were up. But I saved those steers to help us with our spring flush. Because we always get this explosion of grass. And you can't keep up with it. Well, we didn't have an explosion of grass because it didn't rain. So that's what I'm saying. I was in Canada. Jan and I did a whole tour through Canada. We were there for almost 4 weeks in June. And this one guy had 150 steers. And they were at 600 pounds. And they were nice looking steers. Pretty good market at that time. But he had it fixed in his mind that he had to go to July 15th to market those steers. He didn't have any grass. Those steers are eating his grass for his cow herd. I said, dude, sell them. Well, I can't, it's not July 15th. He ended up having to sell a bunch of his cows. Sell those steers. Don't name your animals. How many of y'all name your cows? Come on, okay. Yeah, don't name them. It's harder to get rid of them. I was on a farm in Virginia and a very wealthy landowner walked out in his cow herd and there was one cow out there. I mean, she must have had 10,000 flies on her. She hadn't shed off. All the rest of them were pretty good shape. But I said, sell that one. Oh, I can't do that. That's Petunia. I said, Petunia needs to be sold. We can't do that. That's Petunia. I said, okay, then get her out, put her up in the crowd, and give her a bale of hay. All she's doing is breeding flies that are attacking your good cattle. That's what she's doing. We call those fly magnets. Folks, they're not going to make you any money. Those long, hairy ones that don't shed off by June, July, last of June, July, get rid of them. They're not going to make you any money. Why didn't they shed off? I don't care if they're gone. Just get rid of them. Problem solved. There's a neighbor. He's a continuous grazer. So it was 104 that day when I took that picture, and his soil temperature, I put a probe on, it was 107. Across the fence on me, where I had the litter bank and the forage, mine was 80 degrees. Folks, it makes a difference. Do you think he's going to grow any grass if he gets a rain right there? Nope. He's nuked his farm. We call that the Columbus method, where you turn your cows out in the spring, you discover them in the fall. That is not going to work. Here's a neighbor. He decided to plow his farm up. He's going to grow some soybeans. He shouldn't have plowed it up. It's rolling hills. It's clay. His topsoil is about that thick. Folks, that's what I got a problem with government subsidies. For land to qualify for CRP, it's got to have a crop history. That's what this guy's doing. He's farming the government. He's giving that land a crop history so he can get government paycheck. I got a problem with that. Why are we paying farmers not to farm? We got young people on this front row. I see a lot of young people out here. Land prices are skyrocketing. In Missouri, they're paying a cash rent, I'm sorry, cash on CRP land. It's $130 to $150 an acre. Up in Iowa, it's a lot higher than that. How somebody just got out of high school, got in a little group of cows, and how's he gonna compete with that? Can't. So we're taking people off the land, paying people not to farm. It's just ridiculous. But this guy, he plowed his farm up. And that's my, Jan and our land here, the close picture. We're losing some water off that land. But it's clean. He's losing his soil. He's giving it to Jan and I. It's coming onto our farm. That's not soil, by the way. That's dirt. It's dirt. It's lifeless soil. Go to the far end of your farm, the lowest point after a big rain, and watch down there. Take you a cup, a glass jar, and dip that water up and set it on the table and look and see how much sediment. See how much sediment settles in the bottom of that. That's going to tell you real well how good a job you're doing at keeping the soil on your farm. So we're cutting this silvo pasture. We've got a lot of trees. And we sell quite a bit of firewood, and I'm like, I'm tired of selling firewood. How can we grow some food? So I got into this. This is shiitake mushrooms. And so you inoculate the log, and in 7 months it's cranking out food. And now Jan is selling this to health food stores and grocery stores in Columbia. And you can dry them. If you get, you know, a couple hundred pounds, you can't sell them all, dry them. A dried mushroom will last 20 years in a Ziploc bag. When you put it back in the water, it goes right back to the original shape. It's another product that we can raise on our farm. Quote, I hate this. I hate this quote. I put that question mark at the end. It's not, this quote is on a major agricultural building in Montana. So when the kids go to university, they climb the ag building. There it is, engraved in marble across the top. Nothing in nature is given. It is one. What did we hear from Peter a while ago? Folks, we got to learn to work with nature. Why this quote means so much to me is because that was me. In my old life, I'd wake up in the morning and go, what can I kill today? I would, because nature's trying to put me out of business. I knew it. It was a battle. It's not a battle. We've got to learn to work with nature. But that's what we're teaching our students today, that are making government policies. They go to the ag committee and they've got this ag degree. It's like, you know, these darn cattle, we've got to get them off the land. So we've got a work cut out for us. That's our website, greenpasturesfarm.net. And that's our YouTube channel, just Greg Judy Regenerative Rancher. Why did I get into that YouTube? It was by accident. I thought if we started telling people more about what we were doing, folks, social media is a big tool. It covers a lot of people. I don't know how many billion people are on the planet. We got people. I got a customer in Australia. He sent me a private email and goes, "Greg, I just want you to know, my little boy Jimmy, he's 3 years old, and after dinner every night, he goes, 'It's great Judy time.'" Well, 3 year old. Got another one I just got last week. A little boy's got a pacifier in his mouth. Ain't got any clothes on, sitting on the recliner, watching a great Judy video. Sucking on his pacifier. Folks, that's where we got to get them. We got to get them young. Because once they get up, and they get a hardened heart, they don't change. Peter was talking about how it's tough to get people to change. It is. You know why it's hard? It's right here. We've got people in Missouri, right across my farm border zone. He's watched what we've done for 30 years. He ain't changed a lick. It's right here. He told my interns last year, he said, "You know what Greg's doing over there? Might work, but it would never work over here." He said, "Furthermore, Greg gets more rain than we do." So I'm going to put a rain monitor right on the corner post so I can prove that we don't get more rain. You know what we do, though? We keep more rain. That's the key. But his heart is so hardened. I gave him my book many years ago, Comeback Farms, in 2008. He did this, and he was an ag teacher. He's teaching kids. And he went through it, and he just stood on the table and walked off. His heart's not in it. He's a show guy. He shows cattle. He feeds a lot of grain. He's got a refrigerant truck out there. He's growing hair on his animals. I'm like, "Jimmy, why are you growing hair on them animals?" "Well, I can shape them better." Like, we're not growing sheep. And I said, "Why won't these cows slick off anymore?" And he looked down at the ground and goes, "Well, let's show people might have something to do with that. We breed bulls that have long hair to cows that have long hair to grow more hair on them so they can shape them." What are we doing? What are we teaching kids today? I don't have a problem with FFA or 4-H or anything. I think it's great to get kids into agriculture, but we're teaching them the wrong way of raising animals. There's no money in it, none. The guy that gets the grand champion steer, he may get $50,000, and everybody else don't even cover their feed cost. We got to get that turned around. So I did a YouTube this morning. I haven't released it yet. The dude lives here in Tennessee. He lives in Tennessee. He has a civics class of high school kids. And those kids, the three of them, sent me an email. I said, "Great, would you do Jay Willie a favor and just..." Every day we watch the YouTube videos, and we love it. He said, "His birthday's on Monday. Would you do a shout out to him?" I'm like, "Absolutely." So I released it. It's going to be released probably tomorrow. But high school, you know, that's where we need to, grade school, we need to start hitting these kids. What's the future of our industry if we don't have the kids coming on? What's the average age, Teddy, of a livestock producer in the United States right now?
Probably mid-50s.
59, 60. So Ian from Africa, he calls it this: the old people are going to have to fall off the perch. Because they're like, "No, you're not going to change. No, you're not going to. This is the way we did it. This is the way Grandpa did it. And if it ain't good enough for you, get out of here." That's what's happening. Well, guess what? A lot of people, young people, are getting out of there. You got to be willing to hand the reins off and trust your kids. I've got interns. We've got a young ranch manager. We have another full-time young guy. And every day we meet, we come out, and they'll ask me, "Greg, what do you got on your mind?" And I'm like, "Well, I was thinking about doing this and this and this." And I said, "I was thinking about doing it this way." And every day, they better me. "Well, have you thought about doing it this way?" I'm like, "No, I haven't, but we're going to do it that way." Folks, when a young person asks you to do it their way or even think about it, don't say, "No, this is the way we do it here. If you don't like it, get going down the road." No, embrace it. And you can always go back and do it your way if it doesn't work. But if you're turning people off and not even listening to the young people, you're going to be on an island. You're going to get up there 75 years old, and guess what's going to happen when you pass that farm on? I can tell you what's going to happen. It's going to have houses growing on it. It's already happening. We just lost a beautiful farm. We didn't lose it. I didn't have the lease on it, but I wish I could have got it bought or somebody leased it. But it's one of the prettiest farms in Boone County. It's got 18 house sites on it now. It's all grass. It had water set up, paddocks, everything. And so a developer never saw a piece of land that didn't look good with houses on it. We're covering up rural America with houses. We got to get that stopped. I'm not sure how to do that. Anybody got any ideas? I'd be willing to listen to that. But we got to get young people back. And like Teddy and Peter were saying, it's got to be profitable. So how do you make it profitable? One is you got to raise functional cattle. I can't thank Teddy enough. And Dave, I think Dave Robertson knows the number of every South Pole cow that's ever been bred. I don't know how he does it, but he does. It took Teddy being a bird dog and a data magnet to go after and produce these South Pole cattle. And it's helped a lot of people. It's helped a lot of people. And I can remember the first field day we had at our farm in 2008, we probably had a third of this at our farm. And to come back 15 years later and see this, folks, this is growing. This is growing. We were laughed at, weren't we, Teddy, in the early days? People like, what are you doing raising those little cattle? Like, we're making money and you're not. But it's pride. And I guess what I want to go with this is, you're not going to change anybody's mind when you make them mad at you. Okay? If it's a debate, and you get in this debate, you can't make them mad at you. So state what you're doing and be polite about it. And walk away. And keep doing that. Don't get in a debate, because if you scream and holler and you're both kicking, brush and stomp and you're full of crap and you're full, you're not going to change their mind. They're not going to change just to spite you. Ian says, let them catch up later. That's what we're doing. And now we're starting to see some of the people in our community that showed up at a grazing school. I'm like, I can't believe that guy's here. He's quiet. He's sitting back in the corner. Nobody notices him. But he's listening. Because what he's doing at his house is not working. Diesel fuel, fertilizer, all this stuff, taxes, it's all going up. Folks, we got to have an animal that will work on the land for us. And if you don't have that animal, I would highly recommend you change. It's hard to get together a group of cattle. The price of sow poles, I mean, they're expensive. But just like they were saying yesterday from this panel, get you a good bull. Get you some functional, moderate frame cows and breed up. Heck, I got a guy in Utah. He gave a talk at the South Pole Conference. Oh, it's been several years ago. Steve Westhoff. And Steve bought a bull from us. He bought one from Ralph and Jerry Voss. Maybe two. And he took him to Escalante, Utah. 8,000 feet elevation. High mountain depth. Just rocks. There's nothing up there but rocks. And South Pole thrived. He put them on longhorn cattle. And Steve used to get laughed out of the market. He sells calves in the fall. He's coming with the little longhorn calves. There's no meat on them. They'd steal them. And Steve would go home disappointed. He put the South Pole cow, the bulls on those longhorn cows. And in about 3 to 4 generations, all the horns were gone. The spots were gone. There was asses on them. He put meat on those longhorn calves. And Steve is topping the market. They're not laughing at him anymore. So I say, if you're in an area where there's corrientes, put a South Pole bull on them. I know people, I did it in San Antonio, Texas. Guy wanted to buy a bunch of South Pole cows and put in, and it was really rough ground. I said, no, they're not, you don't have any grass. I said, let's go to your neighbor. I knew a guy down the road that had some really nice corrientes. I bought the whole herd. Brought them into his farm. He put a South Pole bull on them, and he's cranking. He's cranking. These South Pole cow folks are tough. But you got to know your cows. You got to know the hair codes. You know, if you got a little bit more hair on your South Poles, you go a little further north with them. You don't want to take a slick, high-gene bull that doesn't grow any hair and throw him up in Minnesota. That's not going to work. He's not going to grow enough hair. So you got to know your animals. But at the end of the day, folks, I want to leave some time for questions here. I want to encourage every one of you all to go home from this conference and do something different. I want you to do something to make your neighbors talk about you. They do. If you have to get naked and run across your pasture, I don't care. I want them to be talking about you, because when they're not talking about you, guess what's happening? You're falling back into your old mold. You got to do something different. It used to upset me to bring my calves to the market. We were in the conventional, and I got the same price that everybody else did. So sale barns are good at selling cattle. They're not good at marketing them. That's your deal. You've got to put a word out there. What you're doing? What are you doing? Share your story with your customers. And that little deal that Gerald Fry talked about, where people be beating your door down to get some of those genetics, you start raising cattle like what we see in these pastures out here, that's what's going to happen. It's already happening. I'll share one more tip with you, then I'll shut up. You don't have to raise as many of them if they're really good. For the prices you can get for a really good, high-quality animal, I have people every day email me and say, Greg, I don't want to take 20 years to get where you're at. I don't. I want to get to where you're at today. And I'm like, okay, this is what's going to cost you. And so they'll buy 4 or 5 cows, and immediately the next year they're off and running. But if you don't have that kind of fortune or money saved back, get you a bull or get some semen and go that route. I don't think you can afford to own a bull unless you have 20 to 30 cows. Not for the quality of semen that you can buy. Okay? So with that, I'm going to open it up to questions. If anybody's got any comments or questions.
All right, folks, there you have it for today's episode. That was Mr. Greg Judy, Regenerative Rancher. If you want to find out more about Greg Judy, you can look him up online at greenpasturesfarm.net. Or if you want to listen to some more videos, Greg has an amazing YouTube channel. Just type in Greg Judy, Regenerative Rancher. It'll pop up. And he's got quite a few videos, a couple hundred, maybe over 1,000 videos now, of his daily goings on at his own operation, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. If you want to find out more about South Pole grass cattle, I invite you to visit us online at southpole.com. That's southpole, P-O-L-L.com, and find out and stay up to date about our news, our association, our producers, and just all the good stuff. If you are on Facebook, please visit us and start following us, the South Pole Grass Cattle Association page or the South Pole Grass Cattle Forum page. So, folks, that's it for me today, and until next time, happy grazing.